Welcome to the Jay Porks Podcast. Coming to you straight out of Staten Island, New York. Bringing you a weekly episode with the finest music news, server problems, and whatever else is going on in Jay's life. Thank you so much for listening. Without further ado, here's Jay.
I don't get the joke. Temporary layoff, good times, easy credit ripple, good times, scratching and surviving, good times. None of these are good things. It's like sodomy is coming, good time. No, it's not. It's not at all. I'm not one of these guys who's blaming the world for where I'm at. I'm at where I'm at because I made bad decisions. But on top of those bad decisions, God's looping up my ass. There's not a thing I know how to do. All I know how to do is take videos at concerts. It's really all I know how to do. And write some words and do a podcast. I don't know how to do anything else. This idea that Pearl Jam are the heroes of the Seattle movement is absolute lunacy. It's insanity. And the no smoking policies kill me. No one wants to smoke in the venue, don't worry. But if the show is going to be 3 hours long, you better stamp my fucking hand and give me and show me where the door is to go out and smoke a cigarette. I paid $60 for a seat so I can retrieve the seats when I come back in from smoking a cigarette.
I always talk about weed. Force headline on you. I am not going to hit you. Here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to force things. I will never force headline on you. I am not going to hit you with a weird festival in, you know, Florida with one band I've heard of and a bunch of EDM artists on it. I'm not going to read that to you. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do me any.
So the lady goes, "Stop complaining. At least you're not dead."
Staten Island is a racist place. Just because you may not be a racist doesn't mean you can write an article saying, "Why are we known as racist? That's so wrong. It shouldn't be like that." Well, everybody's a racist. Spend your day clipping coupons. Go to the supermarket. Buy food. And prepare it at home. I know that's a wild and crazy idea.
You can't... Don't you dare! Spin Magazine, you do some dumb things. But I gotta tell you, you spent 7 weeks hyping the Ryan Adams covering Taylor Swift album, and then you panned it? Are you good?
Welcome back into another action-packed edition of the Jay Porks Podcast. I'm Jay Porks, with me as always on the other side of the glass, making sure this is a well-oiled podcast machine. Every week is the ever-popular... Nobody. Everything is on the back burner this week. Every single thing goes on the back burner because Scott Weiland is dead. On Thursday night, Scott Weiland was found dead on his tour bus at the age of 48. Throughout a 2-decade-plus career with Stone Temple Pilots, Velvet Revolver, and various solo ventures, the singer became just as well known for his personal demons as for his obvious musical talents. But his recorded legacy stands strong. Weiland's signature baritone delivery, glam-derived swagger, and a way with a tender hook made him one of the standout voices of the 90s and beyond. It's fairly accurate. That's really accurate. And it sucks. Let's just say this. It's fucking terrible that you can't give anyone props while they're alive. You know what I'm saying? This includes me. I got my hand raised here. I agree. It's me too. I'm lumping myself in with this. Seems like people don't get the credit that they deserve till they're dead. Now, I know you may listen to this podcast. I already saw a couple of emails telling me that I was making fun of Scott Weiland on my podcast for the better part of 2 years. I wasn't making fun of Scott Weiland. I was making fun of Scott Weiland claiming to be sober. And I was also angry that Scott Weiland was claiming to be sober, and he wasn't. Well, you know what? I don't know if he was or not. But his bass player, Tommy Black, was arrested with found with possession of cocaine. They also found some cocaine on the bus. Scott Weiland died on the bus. Cardiac arrest. I'm going to put two and two together. The outcry from the community, the alternative rock community, has been vast. But one that a written tribute that really got to me was Billy Corgan. And I'm going to read this to you as soon as this website decides that I'm not going to buy Charmin Ultra. I'm going to buy whatever toilet paper is on sale. Because that's the kind of person I am. Words from Billy Corgan. We mourn all that might have been. Corgan added of Weiland's ultimately untimely passing at the age of 48. And as any fan, I find myself reflecting on what I do have. In scarce moments when Scott and I spoke as contemporaries and got to know each other as people, I tried to make him giggle when I saw the manic whirl of the dumb parties we were at, in Hollywood no less, might be causing undue stress. On Thursday, December 3rd, Stone Temple Pilots frontman was found dead on his tour bus due to cardiac arrest. We'll get to more. What's more from Corgan. Not only was the knight up front freshly handsome to a fault, but he could sing too. The Smashing Pumpkins rocker wrote, comparing him to David Bowie. Corgan added, if you asked me who I truly believed were the great voices of our generation, I'd say it were he, Layne Staley, and Kurt Cobain. Think about that for a second. Think about Billy Corgan saying that Scott Weiland is up there with Kurt Cobain and Layne Staley. Kurt Cobain and Layne Staley are voices of a generation. Is Billy right? Oh, you can't see my facial expressions here. First of all, it's too early for me. Somebody asked me. I had a couple of emails. The ones that were telling me that I was making fun of Scott Weiland, and the other ones telling me that this statement is bullshit. And I'm going to be one to say that I'm not going to sit here and tell you. Like, Kurt Cobain died over 20 years ago. Layne Staley died, what was it, 13 years ago? Scott Weiland died a couple of days ago. You know, I'm still in mourning mode here. I feel like I'm still. My first time at PNC Bank Art Center was to see Velvet Revolver. My second time at PNC Bank Art Center was to see the Stone Temple Pilots. If the Stone Temple Pilots didn't take the Meat Puppets on tour in the 90s, I'm working for a band that nobody's heard of. I mean, yeah, it helped that they got on Nirvana's Unplugged, but Stone Temple Pilots took them on tour. Stone Temple Pilots were fucking popular. And I've got the chart listing to prove it here in a second. First time I was ever at PNC Bank Art Center in Homedale, New Jersey, was to see Velvet Revolver with Alice in Chains and Kill Hannah. I went with my friend Nicole because this was... I don't have rides. This is the story of me not having... It's the story of me not having rides to concerts. So, my friend Nicole, who's not into any music that I could name, agreed to take me to the show because we would hang out every day and smoke weed. So, she had nothing to do that night. But what the fuck? It's only a couple hours. So, I went to see Velvet Revolver and Alice in Chains. And it was really cool. They covered some Guns N' Roses. I'm pretty sure they played Interstate Love Song. It's very cool. And then the next year, I went back to the PNC Bank Art Center because the Stone Temple Pilots had gotten back together. It was in 2008. And they had finally, like, gotten back together. And I bought tickets. I said, holy shit, I'm going to get to see the Stone Temple Pilots. You know, one of the bands that I liked when I was a kid isn't dead. And I'm going to get to see them. And it's going to be great. And I saw, it was Stone Temple Pilots and Filter. And Ashes Divide. Filter rocked, and Stone Temple Pilots rocked too, but I actually... it was weird because when I... It's strange to say. Like, I'm really... I don't know. This is really bothering me. It's really getting to me. So we're at the show because I have the review up right now and I'm reading it. So Filter went off at 9, and we were waiting for Stone Temple Pilots to come out. 9:30 came, they didn't come out. 10 o'clock came, they didn't come out. 10:15, they didn't come out. And it says here, at 10:15, I turned to my buddy Chach and said, you know, showmanship. Oh, man. And, what's it say here? And, you know, people were getting drunk and a couple of people started screaming, and coming up next, Filter! But then somebody's like, he's the new Axl Rose. At 10:25, I turned to my friend Chach and I said, you know, if this guy's dead, they'd have someone out here stalling us or something. So there was a Scott O'Deed chant happening at PNC Bank on Center. Then they came out. It was a little after 10:15. Then they came out. Scott could barely fucking talk because he kept trying to apologize. Kept trying to apologize, but he didn't. He couldn't fucking speak. He kept slurring his words. I felt so bad. But they played 17 songs. They came out late and played 17 songs. But yeah, PNC is a place that closes at like 11 o'clock, so that could be tough. And the DeLeos are from New Jersey, so they were very embarrassed that Scott wouldn't come off the tour bus and come on stage. And again, it's just battling with demons. It's just continuous demons. I got to see the Stone Temple Pilots again. I got to see them. It was the MMR barbecue in Camden, New Jersey. I was with Pam. And it was Alice in Chains, Stone Temple Pilots, Alice in Chains, 3 Days Grace, Fuel, Skillet, Automatic Dive, and there's another band I'm forgetting. That show, I got to see Jerry Cantrell come on stage and jam with Stone Temple Pilots. That was pretty awesome. We were down really in the front, like right in front. And that's a time where I saw the Stone Temple Pilots, and I didn't think, oh man, heroin. I didn't think that at all. I just saw it, and I thought they were back on their game. And I know they had a single or an EP or a single, not the one with Chester. They put out a fairly new one around that time. And then they disbanded again. And recently with Chester Bennington now, I mean, well, listen, now I feel bad. If I'm Chester Bennington, how do I feel that I was the last singer in Stone Temple Pilots? Sucks. Especially when you read about how Chester Bennington got to become the lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots, and he mentions that as a child he grew up loving these songs. Me too, Chester. Now this guy's dead. I mean, I've got Matt Sorum. Matt Sorum's got beef with Scott Weiland. They've got beef since Velvet Revolver. Velvet Revolver drummer Matt Sorum reminisced about Scott Weiland and his time with the singer in a new interview just recorded days after Weiland's death at the age of 48. It was a long chat with SiriusXM's Matt Pinfield. Ooh, and a follower of mine on Twitter, Matt Pinfield. An emotional Sorum said of his former bandmate, in the end, I just want the world to know that I feel like I made peace with him. Sorum says that he and Duff McKagan were about to go to a dinner and a Gary Clark Jr. concert when they learned of Weiland's death. This guy dropped Duff McKagan and Gary Clark Jr.'s name in the same sentence. The two canceled their initial plans in order to reflect on their time with Weiland.
Velvet Revolver bandmates previously released a statement about the former Stone Temple Pilots vocalist. "We experienced a good chunk of life with Scott, and even if his darkest, even in his darkest times, we had all hope and love for him," they wrote. "I don't know how I felt initially because I can't say it was a shock, but I definitely wasn't expecting it." Well, here's the thing. If something's not a shock, you're not... If something wasn't a shock, then you were expecting it. If something is a shock, then you weren't expecting it. Let me just... I'm just going to break down the English language for people, okay? So you can't say, "I wasn't really shocked, but I was a bit surprised." No, you can't. "Because I felt Scott was going to be here longer than this," Sorum told SiriusXM's Lithium Radio. "People know that in the end, we had our differences and the band split up. But the wave of emotions that you feel is more like a family member. It's like if you had a family member that maybe you didn't get along with great, but you still love them. So that's the feeling." Sorum also called working with Weiland and Velvet Revolver the highlight of his career. This is a guy who's been in Guns N' Roses, by the way. Guns N' Roses with Slash, not Guns N' Roses with Buckethead. "Being in a band, obviously in my career, has never been a perfect ride. But the reality of it, of its rock and roll, is never a perfect ride. Real rock and roll. And I think Scott Weiland was that guy. He was complicated, yes, but the artistry was magnificent." Sorum later reminisced about the grueling auditions for the lead singer vacancy in Velvet Revolver and how Weiland blew his future bandmates away with his abilities. "When Scott came in, it was like magic. All of a sudden, here's this guy that can write a melody in about 5 minutes and write a lyric, and you just have a song that was content, and you have that song that was contemporary," Sorum said. "I just looked at Slash and Duff, and I said, that's your guy, Scott Weiland, rock star, the real deal. These characters that we've lost through the ages, their soul and their heart and everything they felt in their life goes into their music. And they do that for us." And the full interview with Matt Sorum and Matt Pinfield is on SoundCloud, and I can share that with you. So, we've got, Billboard has done some things here. Billboard's got some numbers. It's, the chart history of the Stone Temple Pilots. Because when you think about when Billy Corgan says that Scott Weiland up there with Kurt Cobain and Layne Staley, you have to think about, you know, how many songs? I mean, what songs do you remember? And then when you go to, like, when you go to look for which Stone Temple Pilots song you want to listen to, you realize there's so many good ones. There's so many. Stone Temple Pilots scored 6 top 10 singles on Billboard's 200, including the three-week number one Purple in 1994. Following a number 3 peak for its predecessor, Core, in 1993. STP also landed 16 top 10 hits on the mainstream rock charts songs airplay chart. Okay. So the Billboard 200 is where there were six top 10 albums. Mainstream rock songs airplay chart has Stone Temple Pilots landing 16 top 10 charts, including 6 number ones, led by 1994's Interstate Love Song, which ruled for 15 weeks. Keep this in mind, folks. 15 weeks is almost 4 months. Now imagine if you turn on the radio and the same song is hot for 4 months. Nobody has songs that are hot for 4 months anymore. Songs are hot for about 4 minutes these days. STP managed 11 top 10 hits on the Alternative Songs Airplay chart, including a 3-week stint for number one for Between the Lines in 2010. That's the latest effort with Scott that I referred to earlier. And Stone Temple Pilots sold 13.5 million albums in the U.S., according to Nielsen Music, pre-2013. Weiland's stint with Velvet Revolver was brief, but its chart performance was impressive. The group logged 2 top 10 entries on the Billboard 200, Contraband entering at number 1 in 2004 and number 5 Libertad in 2007. Contraband went to number 1.
Like, this guy was out of his original band. He was in another band with a bunch of guys who were out of their original band and in another band with other guys. And they fucking pumped out a number one hit. And then the next album was number 5. And Libertad's a great album because I remember listening to the album, prepping to see the show. Velvet Revolver also notched 4 top 10s on the mainstream songs tally. Mainstream rock songs tally. Including 2 number 1s and 2 top 10 alternative songs. Including the 4-week number 1 Slither in 2004, the band has sold 2.4 million albums in the US. Not bad for a side project. Weiland enjoyed some success as a solo artist as well, with 3 albums cracking the Billboard 200 and 3 tracks earning top 40 status on alternative songs. His 1998 album 12 Bar Blues managed the number 42 Billboard peak. His 2008 set Happy in Galoshes hit number 97, and Blaster, his latest outfit, Scott Weiland and the Wildabouts, reached number 133. Spoiler alert. Blaster is probably going to climb the charts this week. Just a guess. Because we live in a world where we can't enjoy somebody when they're alive. So when somebody's alive, we don't enjoy them. And then when they die, we're like, oh, well, we're going to show our appreciation, even though, you know, this guy was alive a little while ago, and we could have, but we didn't. And I'm sticking with Billboard here in terms of articles, because they've got Scott Weiland's top 10 biggest hits on alternative song radio. That's what it's called. I'm not saying it wrong. It says Alternative Songs Chart. That's what it says. That's the name of the category that it's in. Me, I live in New York City. There ain't no rock radio here. I can't turn on the radio and see alternative radio. And I don't know if this factor's in serious or what. Biggest hits based on airplay. Number 1, of course, is Interstate Love Song. It peaked at number 2 on the Billboard charts. And that was in October and November of 1994. Number 2 is Trippin' on a Hole in a Paper Heart, which peaked at number 3 on July 13th, 1996. Number 3, this is a shock, Slither, Velvet Revolver. Peak position, number 1. Slither went to number 1 on the Billboard charts. And that was July 3rd, 2004. That was over 11 years ago. Damn. We're all old. Every one of us. We're going to die soon. At least we'll get to hear that cool concert in the sky. Number 4, Vaseline. Peaked at number 2, August 6, 1994. Number 5, another shocker, Big Bang Baby. Peaked at number 2, April 6, 1996. Number 6, favorite of mine, Sour Girl. It peaked at number 3, June 24th, 2000. So even into the new millennium, Stone Temple Pilots were cranking out hits. Number 7, Lady Picture Show. Peaked at number 6, December 7th, 1996. This is a fun fact. That was 19 years ago today, like as I record this. It is December 7th right now. You'll probably hear this on December 8th. So that was Lady Picture Show. It peaked at number 6 on this date in 1996. Number 8 is Fall to Pieces, another Velvet Revolver track. It peaked at number 2 on October 16th, 2004. Plush, this is actually, and I'm going to run up the list here. Yes, this is the earliest charting Stone Temple Pilots song, Plush. And it charted at number 9. June 26th, 1993. So this was about 2 months after Kurt Cobain died. No, I'm sorry. Whoa. I'm a year off here. You'll find out in the second half why I'm a year off. So,
Scott Weiland has a hit and Kurt Cobain's still alive. And finally, Big Empty. Peaked at number 7, June 11th, 1994. And look at the little thing here. Scott Weiland, Stone Temple Pilots, Velvet Revolver, top Billboard Alternative Songs hits chart, is based on actual performance on the weekly Billboard Alternative Songs chart through the December 12th, 2015 ranking. Songs are ranked based on an inverse point system, with weeks at number 1 earning the greatest value and weeks at farthest rank earning the lowest. Due to changes in chart methodology over the years, certain eras are weighted to account for different chart turnover rates over various periods. Scott Weiland is dead, man. That sucks. I feel like I was just reading that interview with Scott Weiland over at Alternative Nation. So that's when it happened. A couple of nights ago, I'm on Twitter, and I see Dave Navarro tweeted, I'd like to pay, I'm sorry for the loss of Scott Weiland. I'm like, oh no, I really hope this dude's Twitter got hacked. Really hope it did. And it didn't. So I was waiting for Alternative Nation. Because Alternative Nation, the guy Brett, was on the bus with Scott, and they were joking around. Like 2 weeks ago. So then when he shared the article, I said, oh shit, real. Things are so real. Damn. So I'm trying to think, like, what song I should play. Because here's the thing. If you've been listening to me for a couple of months, a couple of weeks, a couple of years, whatever the case may be, every now and then, when I think nobody's listening, when I think nobody's paying attention, I slip in a little track. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play you the last song. You know what? It's good to go out on top. So I'm going to play the last song that Scott Weiland wrote that peaked at number 1. And then we're going to come back after this. We'll be right back.
everybody. It's Andy from the Andy Dare Show just thanking you for checking out the Jay Porks podcast. If you want to support Jay and his show, it's easy and it's free. All you got to do is go to Facebook, search Jay Porks, and push the like button. Also on Twitter, at Jay Porks. Also Instagram, at Jay Porks. There's a running theme here. It's Jay Porks all the time. And the HQ is jayporks.com. If you want to support the Dare Podcast Network, all you got to do is go to andydare.com and subscribe via iTunes. You'll get the Andy Dare Show, the Jay Porks Experience, the Tyler Cale Show, and Spin Class for absolutely $0. We want to thank everybody who's helped spread the word here at Dare Network over 2 years that we've been doing it. And back to the Jay Porks Podcast.
And we are back. Okay, had to play a little Velvet Revolver there, because that band is underrated. And again, they are underrated every time I listen to their music. Now, usually this is the portion of the podcast where we hit you with the music news and all that stuff. But I gotta be honest, I mean, if you heard the 100th episode, you heard me and Christina making fun of what is about to happen over the next couple of weeks, and that is the year-end lists. Top albums of the year. Here's the thing. This type of stuff can get me mad and ruin my night. Like, for instance, remember when Adele put out her album like 7 days ago? It was literally 14 days ago. Remember that? All right. So Rolling Stone has the top 100 albums, the 50 best albums of the year. And Adele is number two. There is no fucking way that you had enough. Even if that's the second best album to come out this year, there's no way that you listen to other records for 10 months, listen to this one for 2 weeks, and came to the conclusion that this is the best record. That's what you, I mean, I don't know what you call it, but it's when you want to put, like, you put Adele in the headline so you can have people click on your thing. Because you want people to click on the thing so they can click your Dodge Ram ads and your beer ads and, you know, make your company money. That's really all it is. For instance, number 19, Kurt Vile, Believe I'm Going Down. That album is strides better than anything I've ever seen, than anything I saw from 18 and lower on this list. Now, I'm not saying the Kendrick Lamar album isn't good. I'm just saying that the Kurt Vile album is better. Like, alright, Keith Richards, Cross-Eyed Heart is number 17. There's no fucking way that Keith Richards has the 17th best album of 2015. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it. Skrillex and Diplo are on here. Wilco made it. I haven't heard much of the Wilco album, but I believe that at least that has there's musicians happening over there. Number 11, Sleater-Kinney, No Cities to Love. Now, I'm not saying that that's not the I'm not saying that I've even listened to 50 albums this year. Just saying, let's call a spade a spade. And I'm just gonna go. I'm just walking through this. See, like Miguel Wildheart. You joking, right? You're joking. Eric Church, Mr. Misunderstood. There's no way that that record is better than fucking the Kurt Vile record. Future is on here. Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment. Mark Knopfler's on here, okay. Florence and the Machine. Literally have not heard one track from that Florence and the Machine album. Or Florence plus the Machine. However you read that. I'm scrolling back because I saw the Adele and I just got mad. Because, I mean, listen. I know that she didn't put her record on a streaming service, so she forced people to buy her record. And a lot of people did buy it, and that's great. That's fantastic for her, because I'm sure she needed the money. Because, you know, she's living in poverty. Oh, she's not. She's already had two hit records. So then why is she not putting her album on streaming services? Oh,
Because she's a selfish cunt, that's why. She doesn't care about her fans listening to her music more about than she cares about her fans paying her money. Just remember that when you're singing along to your favorite Adele tracks, she doesn't give a fuck about you. All she cares about is your greenbacks. All she cares about is your money. Marilyn Manson, the Pale Emperor, is checking in at 34 on Rolling Stone's 50 Best Records of the Year. It's a good album. It's a good album, and I'm surprised it actually made this list, because it's a said good album. Good albums usually don't make the Rolling Stone list. The thing about it is, people are saying, like, oh, whoa. First of all, I just saw this Bob Dylan covers album, Shadows in the Night. All right, so Bob Dylan covers, like, Frank Sinatra. And it's okay. But it's a covers record that's making number 49 on the list. It's a covers record that wasn't as good as Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just... And people are going to say, well, listen, Jay, we don't care what you think. We know you like that death metal rock and roll. We know you like to worship Satan when you listen to your rock and roll. But Adele is great. And you know why she's great? Because she sold all these records. And that's awesome. And if you think that record sales are a feat of measurement to decide how good an artist is, then you all think Madonna is the best thing to ever happen to life. I am so sick. For 15 fucking years, ever since I've been downloading tunes from fucking Napster, and I argue with people about music, all they want to do is tell me about how many records this sold. How many? That's the Dave Grohl thing. Oh, well, Foo Fighters, biggest band in the world. Yes, so? He was in the biggest band. When you're in the biggest band in the world, it's easy to become the biggest band in the world again. He was in the biggest band in the history of the world. The history of the world. History. Entirety. The entirety of life. Before you guys start emailing me, oh, you know, the Beatles and stuff. Fuck you guys. Are you guys serious? Okay. The most important band to ever happen was Nirvana. And Dave Grohl was in that band. Therefore, anything he does is going to reach the top of the charts. Doesn't make him good. He's a good drummer. Doesn't make him a good front man for a band. Adele selling records doesn't mean her album's great. It doesn't. It just means that you people are gullible assholes who couldn't find a way to download it. That's all it means. And I don't care what you... Like, I'm not going to... You know, people said, oh... Stop fat shaming Adele. Well, I don't care. I don't even know what she looks like. I don't care what her weight is. She's probably hot. I'm sure she's a good-looking woman. You know, whatever. Whatever the case may be. Her music is not good. I do not like her music. And there's a lot of people, same thing with Taylor Swift. There's a lot of people, you know, that hopping on board. They're like, you know what? I enjoy this. And that's cool. You're allowed to enjoy what you want. But don't pretend that is the end-all. Don't pretend that Adele is the end-all, be-all because she sold a bunch of records. Because the only reason she sold those records is because she didn't stream her record. Therefore, it wasn't easily downloadable. It's a trick. It's a mind fuck is what it is. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And so, like, you know, when I'm looking for what should I talk about in the music headlines portion of the day, and every website is doing their fucking... Everybody's doing their year-end fucking lists. And I'm sad that I didn't get to the Bowery Ballroom this week. Did you guys see Dinosaur Jr.'s playing 30th anniversary shows at the Bowery Ballroom? It's like a 10-night residency. They had fucking Rollins on stage. They had Fred Armisen on stage. They had guests galore all week at the Bowery Ballroom. And I fucking didn't get to see it because I was fucking... because my life was in shambles for a couple of weeks, and I didn't even fucking realize that I was doing it. Right. So, like, I mean, every time I see a picture going on from this Dinosaur Jr. fucking set, I'm just like, damn, I could have went to this. I could have went to it, and I would have paid, but I probably could have found a way to not pay. I mean, I got some friends in the biz. I don't know, though. Okay. This is... Alright, so... what I've got here... before we close up shop today... I've got a letter. This is a letter from Scott Weiland's ex-wife, Mary Weiland, on behalf of his two children. This was published straight to Rolling Stone... no edits. Well, there might be edits, but no, like, added commentary. This is straight from Scott Weiland's ex-wife, Mary Forsberg Weiland. I'm going to read it. It's on behalf of his children. December 3rd, 2015 is not the day Scott Weiland died. It is the official day the public will use to mourn him. And it was the last day he could be propped up in front of a microphone for the financial benefit or enjoyment of others. The outpouring of condolences and prayers offered to our children, Noah and Lucy, has been overwhelming, appreciated, and even comforting. But the truth is, like so many other kids, they lost their father years ago. What they truly lost on December 3rd was hope. Shit. We don't want to downplay Scott's amazing talent, presence, or his ability to light up any stage with brilliant electricity. So many people have been gracious enough to praise his gift. The gift of music is here to stay. But at some point, someone needs to step up and point out that, yes, this will happen again. Because as a society, we almost encourage it. We read awful show reviews, watch videos of artists falling down, unable to recall their lyrics, streaming on a teleprompter just a few feet away. And then we click add to cart, because what actually belongs in a hospital is now considered art. Many of those artists have children. Children with tears in their eyes, experiencing panic because their cries go unheard. You might ask, how are we to know? We read that he loved spending time with his children and that he'd been drug-free for years. In reality, what you didn't want to acknowledge was a paranoid man who couldn't remember his own lyric and was only photographed with his children a handful of times in 15 years of fatherhood. I've always wanted to share more than anyone was comfortable with. When writing a book years ago, it pained me to sometimes gloss over so much grief and struggle. But I did what I thought was best for Noah and Lucy. I knew that they would one day feel everything that I'd been trying to shield them from, and that they'll eventually be brave enough to say, that mess was our father. We loved him. But a deep-rooted mix of love and disappointment made up the majority of our relationship with him. Even after Scott and I split up, I spent countless hours trying to calm his paranoid fits, pushing him into the shower and filling him with coffee, just so that I can drop him into the audience at Noah's talent show or Lucy's musical. Those short encounters were my attempts at giving the kids a feeling of normalcy with their dad, but anything longer would often turn into something scary and uncomfortable for them. Spending so many years immersed in Scott's multiple illnesses led to my own depression. At one point, I was misdiagnosed as bipolar. I feel the same would happen for my children. There are times where Child Protective Services did not allow him to be alone with them. When Scott did move on to another relationship, I hoped it would inspire him to grow. I had often encouraged him to date a normal girl, a woman who was also a mother, someone who had the energy that I no longer had to love him. Instead, when he remarried, the children were replaced. They were not invited to his wedding. The child support checks often never arrived. Our once sweet Catholic boy refused to watch the kids participate in Christmas Eve plays because he was now an atheist. They have never set foot into his house, and they can't remember the last time they saw him on a Father's Day. I don't share this with you to cast judgment. I do so because most of you know at least one child in the same shoes. If you do, please acknowledge them and their experience. Offer to accompany them to the father-daughter dance, or teach them to throw a football.
even the bravest girl or boy will refrain from asking for something like that. They may just be ashamed or not want to inconvenience you. Just offer or even insist if you have to. This is the final step in our long goodbye to Scott. Even though it felt like we had no other choice, maybe we should have never let him go. Maybe we never should have let him go. Or maybe these last few years of separation were his parting gift to us. The only way he could think to soften what he knew would one day crush deep into our souls. Over the last few years, I could hear his sadness and confusion when he'd call me late into the night, often crying about the inability to separate himself from the negative people and bad choices. I won't say he can rest now, or that he's in a better place. He belongs with his children barbecuing in the backyard, waiting for a Notre Dame game to come on. We are angry about and sad about this loss, but we are most devastated that he chose to give up. Noah and Lucy never sought perfection from their father. They just kept hoping for a little effort. If you're a parent not giving your best effort, all anyone asks you is to try a little harder and don't give up. Progress, not perfection, is what your children are praying for. Our hope for Scott has died, but there is still hope for others. Let's choose to make this first time that we don't glorify this tragedy with talk of rock and roll and the demons that, by the way, don't have to come with it. Skipping the depressing t-shirt with 1967 to 2015 on it. Use the money to take a kid to a ball game or out for ice cream. Whoa. That's fucking painful. I just read this. This just came across Rolling Stone now. So,
there's that.
I'll share this with you. I'll share this with you guys on the note. All right. On that note, I guess I'll give you a list of websites. Get on out of here. Keep me in business. I can't even remember anymore. ConcertConfessions.com is where you get all your live music news and reviews for the fans by the fans. ChristinaRocks.com, Hang the DJ, 89xradio.com, every Sunday morning, throwback alternative, every Sunday. ChristinaRocks.com, no H in Christina, coolest cucumber in the salad. AndyDeer.com is headquarters, where you get the Andy Deer Show, the Tyler Kale Show, Jesse Unplugged, Smooth Operators with Tyler and Andy. No, not Smooth Operators, it's Spin Class. Smooth Operators was an old school show. I'm sorry, I'm very confused. And every week, the headlines are powered by Annie Quiet. Till next week, folks. Wacky Weed and Warren Zevon. Rest in peace, Scott Weiland.
This has been the Jay Parks Experience. Thank you so much for listening.